Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
This episode of Bullshit Breakaway is brought to you by you. For real this time, patreon.com/bullshitbreakaway. We make a giant announcement at the beginning of this podcast talking about the end of our run with The Athletic. We also have Molly Walker from the New York Post on and New York Ranger legend Jeff Bookaboom to come talk about the team and the future of the team and everything else around everything right now. Quiet trade deadline. Greg and I break it all down here on Bullshit Breakaway. Here's the captain, Mark Messier.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Hey, Blue Shirt Breakaway fans. Welcome to another week of the Blue Shirts Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Mead, and I am up for the last time, The Athletic, Gregory. Say hello.
Am I not of The Athletic?
Gregory, I'm with my co-host Gregory Kaplan of The Athletic for the last time. Gregory, say hello.
For the last time. I'd like to thank the Academy.
And The Athletic for taking a shot on us.
Without them and Moses, all things were possible, blah, blah. No, man, it was a good experience.
It's a good run. Oh, yeah, so we should probably announce it. If you haven't seen it on Twitter yet, this will be our last episode on The Athletic. We've decided to go independent. We are indie people now.
Yes.
And we wanted to go back to our old ways. Honestly, a big part of it was to get back to our community. And a lot of our fans have been really receptive about that. So I cannot thank you enough for all the kind words everyone has said to us. The way we're doing this now, and you're probably going to hear us talk about it once in a while, is our Patreon. The reason why we're bringing this up is it's how you support us. It's how we do the show. I'm not going to talk about it much longer, but the things that will be changing about the show, the main show that comes out every Tuesday, absolutely nothing. The show will still be around, all the same stuff. It's not going anywhere, whatever. BSBOT, which is the episode that comes out later in the week, either on Thursday or Friday morning, will be moving exclusively to the Patreon in a few weeks. We will give you guys an exact date on that later this week, but that's exactly what's going on. So if you want to keep hearing BSBOT or support us for what we're doing, our newsletters, Gambling with Greg podcast, couple other new stuff. I'm going to be reviewing some videotape, breaking down videotapes of the kids, all that stuff. We're going to do a bunch of fun stuff on Patreon. If you want to become a supporter, you can go to patreon.com/BlueShirtsBreakaway. That's what's up. I want to thank The Athletic so much for calling me randomly one day and being like, we need a Ranger podcast. Do you want to be it? Me and Greg being like, why would they want us? We're idiots. And then taking a shot on us for a long time. And, you know, people were going to ask, like, did you get fired? And the answer is no. And I'm not joking. Like, we legitimately did not get fired. Greg and I decided to leave on our own terms, and we just think it's better to go independent at this point. And that's exactly what happened. Did I miss anything there, Greg?
Yeah, guys, trust me. Had we gotten fired,
yeah, you would know.
Content would be fire.
I promise.
It would be. you would enjoy it more if we did, because the stories would be fantastic. It got to a point where we hold no ill will. We're still going to have a very lot of fun people that we've met along the way at The Athletic on the show, ideally. There are just more things we wanted to do that we weren't able to do. And now we're going to be able to do them because we don't have to report to anybody but ourselves and our viewers and our listeners. So it's about, right, we had a deep talk, and then we can stop talking about it after this. Ryan and I had a deep talk. We asked ourselves what our goals were, what we wanted to do. Was this still fun? And the things we want to do that are going to be fun, we just need to do them on our own. So that's what we're going
to
do.
Yep. We wanted to write. We wanted to do videos. We wanted to do more weird stuff. We wanted to do more nonsense. And we'll keep the nonsense as much as possible off into individual. They'll still be on the show. It's going to be the same show. Okay, relax. But we'll keep the nonsense to what it is. But we wanted to be able to do like emergency podcasts. We want to do baseball over-unders. We want to do football over-unders. And those will still be on this feed. There'll be bonus episodes that'll still be here or on the Patreon. But that's just what it is. We wanted to be able to do them. And have some fun with it. That's all. So
yeah, the Athletic rightfully doesn't want Ryan and I doing an episode on their feed about whether I think the Marlins are going to win 72 games this year.
Exactly. They don't care. And rightfully so, by the way. But some of you might. And if you do, we're going to keep doing stuff like that. So it's fun.
My master's bets were not good this weekend.
That's not surprising.
Going to get out ahead of it and say, John Rahm did what he did, Ryan. He made his late push at the end of the week, but he had such a bad Saturday, he couldn't dig himself out of the hole.
I did. I do like the name that our Patreon subscribers have given for your gambling, which is Grambling. I do like that.
Yeah, but then there's a very famous university called Grambling. Yes.
Oh, I don't know that. Sorry.
Oh yeah.
My apologies. Is that bad? Did I do a boo-boo?
It's bad. It would be bad for you if you had like a large knowledge of other universities and colleges that aren't Marist and only Marist.
Yeah, that's
and maybe like Harvard schools,
Suffolk Community College.
For you, Long Island. Yeah, for you, no, I don't think it's terrible, but yeah, Grambling, super famous college.
Cool, did not know that. All right, let's get to our mega show today. We have a crazy good show. Weird, right?
Yeah, because I'm crazy fucking tired.
It's true. Greg just traveled. Let's leave that to right before the break. Oh, your little stories and all that. But let's get to some Rangers real quick before we get to everything else.
And the Lightning, who are cheating.
The Lightning are cheating, right, of course. What the hell? All right. I did want to get to this, but so let me get this straight. The Lightning are negative $9 million in cap space right now, and we're able to get a player without giving up somebody on their active roster currently. Okay.
Yeah, because they're fucking cheating.
Okay, cool. All right. Good. Yeah,
they have long-term injured reserve cap space, Ryan, which is, you know, fake money,
right?
As we all know. Their current cap space is $0. It's fantastic. But they've used $17 million in long-term IR. Stamkos picked up a phantom injury. Kucherov, they're not going to bring back until the season is over. They got Gaborik hidden down there. They have Anders Nielsen hidden down there. They have Jan Rutta hidden down there. I don't know who the hell Mitchell Stevens is. I'm pretty sure they just made him up, but he's down there on long-term IR as well. Yeah, they're fucking cheating. I honestly, at this point, don't know what else to say about the Tampa Bay Lightning. I need to go back and listen to my two-minute rambling when this trade happened on Saturday.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. We're trying to get good friend of the show who's on the show this week, Molly Walker, to write about it for the New York Post.
Yep.
Don't think she's going
probably
to.
Probably not. Not Molly's fault.
It drives me up a wall. All one team had to do was offer Cirelli or Sergachev money. And everyone was like,
say it with Barzal, man. We don't have to do this. This is the same podcast we do every week. Let's talk about the Rangers real quick. Trade deadline has come and gone. We talk about Zach Jones and the possibility of him signing with Molly Walker. We also have Jeff Bookaboom on the show. That's pretty cool also. I mean,
not to bury the lead.
But Jeff Bookaboom, four-time Stanley Cup champion, is on the show. Cool. All right. He talks about the Rangers with us. Who knew? Pretty cool.
Whatever. Not a big deal for us.
So trade deadline came and gone. Brent Lemieux obviously was traded a couple weeks ago, which we thought was a giant win for the New York Rangers. I thought, and I wrote about over the weekend, that there was...
Not to cut.
Yeah, go ahead. This is what we do.
Has the BSBOT ever gotten outdated more quickly?
No, never. You, at the end of BSBOT last week, said, no, I don't think any first will be traded this deadline. And then the second I pressed publish, the Islanders have traded for – they traded a first for two Devils.
Palmieri and Zajac.
Yep. There you go.
Yeah, and I think, seven first-rounders got traded
in the
last 4 days?
Yeah.
To be fair, though, I also said a first would not get traded for Taylor Hall. They were screaming from the rooftops that the New York Rangers were going to have to give up a haul for Jack Eichel because the Sabres can't possibly be the Sabres anymore, and they can't possibly be as dumb as they had been in the past. Are you shitting me with what the Sabres did over the last couple of days? Incredible work for them to somehow find a way to not improve.
What's actually incredible is how the Columbus Blue Jackets, who I know have been a little bit of a tire fire this year, but have been a respectable organization over the past five, no matter what you have to say about Tortorella, have come away with like an abundance of valuable picks for players who I don't think are extremely overly talented. Where Taylor Hall won an MVP 3 years ago and got traded. I know, listen, the no move it called played into this. It absolutely did. He came out and said it played into it. So he wanted to go to the Bruins. Maybe that's how the Bruins made it happen. But what the Bruins gave up for him is a joke, like an absolute joke. There's no way around that. The no movement contract for Eichel is heading that way also. It's heading that way.
It's like the Sabres are like, well, we didn't have a choice. I mean, you do have one choice, which is just to keep him. If you weren't going to get anything for him, you don't have to trade him. There's no law that says, well, shit, we suck, so we're going to trade this guy because what the hell else is going to happen? I get, like, you still have a bargaining chip. It's not a strong bargaining chip. It's not the world's best one. It's not going to juice up the offer that much. But if the Bruins are like, hey, man, we got this bag of shit that's lit on fire, can we have Taylor Hall? If you're the Sabres, you can at least ask them to put the fire out before you make the trade. Like, I get it. It's going to be bad no matter what. But they are just – because it's not just Hall. Montour, they got crushed. Eric Staal, they got crushed. And people, when the Eric Staal trade happened, were thinking, oh, well, you know, maybe that's just, like, the going rate for players. Nick Foligno got a first-round draft pick.
Yeah.
Nick Foligno.
Yeah.
What, like incredible. Just absolutely
and
incredible.
And I know Eric Staal had a down year, but Eric Staal is still a valuable player.
Nick Foligno's injured. forget it. Yeah. I don't understand. Okay. Just a masterclass by Buffalo. Anybody who comes to my mentions over the next month or year or however long, I don't know time anymore. It's been a very long day on top of a very long weekend. But it's anyone who says, well, you have to account for the fact that the Rangers are trading for a player of this caliber. No. You have to account for the fact that it's Buffalo Sabres. And I'm now at a point where if it's more than Hayek, Howden, and a fifth-round pick, I don't want to do it.
Yep. Listen, I have to tell you, Kravtsov, who has been – I know you've had a very busy weekend. Kravtsov has looked incredible as a New York Ranger.
I've heard good things.
He has just been more than I expected, more lively than I expected, adjusted to the game and the speed. Quicker, the Islanders games – listen, it was tough. It was tough, especially because, in my opinion, the Rangers had – listen, I'm giving myself hope. This is my fault. I'm doing it to myself. The Rangers had a somewhat slim chance of hope that the Buffalo Sabres could steal a game or two against the Bruins, and that maybe if the Rangers continued to win out and do what they were doing, maybe they could catch the Bruins if things all went right, and it was an absolute disaster for the Bruins. The Bruins ended up trading for Hall, taking him away from Buffalo, so now he's on their team, and then they will play the Buffalo Sabres six times in a row. The Rangers
not just that. We should also make mention that the Sabres also got Mike Riley, who's been having a fantastic season. And he's just going to make that defense better. He's essentially going to be able to be Charlie McAvoy light, which is exactly what the team that has Charlie McAvoy needs.
You were you said the Sabres, but you meant the Bruins. But yes.
I sure did.
Yep.
I said Adam Norris.
I'm here
for
you.
I meant it.
I'm here for you. But in this occasion, the Rangers played the Islanders very tough in both games. I thought the children looked great in both games. The Islanders haven't lost when they've scored the first goal this year. Not once. That's insane. The Rangers took them to overtime. Even with Panarin, who right now, last night, seemed like he might be a little off. He had a heating pad on his back in the middle of the game. So maybe he's nursing something right now. It was one of the first nights I really thought Panarin wasn't at 100%. Kreider had a really rough night, truly. Mika Zibanejad was a rough night also. Pretty much everyone that wasn't, and I can't believe I'm saying this, Brandon Smith and Lieber Hayek and the children had a rough night for the New York Rangers, and they still took the Islanders to overtime. The team is good. It really is. It's good. It's fun. It's young. There's a lot to look forward to. Will they make the playoffs? Likely not. They need to win both games versus the Islanders, and they need the Buffalo Sabres, who are a disaster, but have been playing better lately, to really take it to the Bruins over the six games they play them in the next few weeks. It's going to be tough, but the ending of the season will be a lot of fun, with maybe possibly Zach Jones coming, Kravtsov being here, and it'll be a nice preview into what will be the first year of the window open next year. There's a lot of good going around here, Greg.
You know what I think the Lightning might have done?
Okay.
I think they have convinced the NHL that their actual salary cap is the Canadian dollar salary cap, which is, you know, larger than the U.S. dollar.
Right.
But anyway, our close personal friend, Jeff Bookaboom, who I feel like we can call Book now.
Yeah, Book.
Later on in the show, he's going to talk about – we ask him whether this season can only be a success if the Rangers make the playoffs. And he explained pretty eloquently how – it's not about the end result. It's about the process in which you get there. This is one of those moments where if the Rangers miss the playoffs, they're playing playoff games right now, essentially. And they just took 3 out of 4 points against one of the more complete teams in the entire Eastern Conference, having the best season in the division for sure, and a team that just added Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac to an already deep lineup. We've made fun of that the Islanders seemingly pay everybody when they don't need to, but by doing so, the Islanders don't have a lot of holes. We can't sit here and criticize one area of that Islander team and call it bad. Do I think they should be paying JG Pageau as much as they do? Absolutely not. But if he's your third center, you're doing something right.
Right.
That team is constructed in a non-salary cap way very well. And they have Barry Trotz, and they have good goaltending, especially Varlamov, who usually destroys the Rangers himself.
Oh, the Sorokin and Igor stuff for the next 10 years is going to torture me.
It's going to be nuts. It's going to be DeGrom Cole. Except they actually play in the same division.
There you go.
And except that one of them is not clearly better than the other.
It's true.
Fine. The worst one gets run support. So
yep.
What do you want? You either get to be the best pitcher in baseball or you get run support. Apparently you can't have both.
Pick a poison there.
Yeah. So shut the fuck up, Mets fans. You guys can stay with the Athletic. The Mets fans can come with me. And I guess the three Rays fans out there that also listen
to us.
You have enough personas where there might be three more of you. What the hell was I saying? I have no idea.
I don't know. Anyway, let's just talk about the trade deadline real quick. I'm not surprised that the Rangers did nothing. I hope the Rangers re-sign Brandon Smith next year. We talk about him a little bit later, too. I'm a big fan of his, and I think...
I'm going to push back slightly on that one.
Yeah. It's up to David Quinn, in my opinion.
Here's what I was going to say. Okay. I want to put a pin in Brendan Smith. I actually remember that I was talking about him. But okay. Molly says this a lot, and I'm going to say it once, and then I'm going to let her say it the rest of the time on this show. We're all, not all of us, some of us are very quick to criticize David Quinn. Credit where credit is due. Chris Kreider is doing one of his disappearing acts again.
Invisibility cloak.
Where did he go in the game?
Fourth line.
Who got rewarded? Was he forcing Kreider down people's throats, or did he make a move?
He made a move.
He made a move. Interesting. Anyway, back to Brendan Smith.
Okay.
I understand why. First of all, I understand why Brendan Smith wants to stay. He sees that this team is growing and maturing and becoming something special, and if he can collect a paycheck while being with this team, I'm all for that. Molly mentions that he would have to take a pay cut in order to stay with the Rangers. Obviously, they're not going to give him another $4 million to be their seventh defenseman. I'm just not of the – in theory, yes, if Brendan Smith wants to come back and wants to sit on the bench and just be an injury replacement or a Quinn Bin substitute and play in the neighborhood of maybe 35 to 40 games next season, I'm not going to sit here and say that's a bad idea. The Rangers are going to have more cap space than they know what to do with, even if they give him $1 million. That's a contract you can bury in AAA if you pass them through waivers. You can move Freddie Claesson, who has played 30 games over the last 2 years, still gets fifth-round draft picks on trade deadline day because people understand when you need to play him, he's quite good, and Brendan Smith can be that kind of player. In that regards, yes, I think Brendan Smith should come back to the New York Rangers. I also just – it's not a position I worry about as a seventh defenseman because just to think – unless the Rangers make a big, splashy trade, which we still think they will, this is a team that next year, the top four is exactly what it's going to be. Lindgren, Fox, Keandre Truba. You're going to have likely Zach Jones or Tarmo on the left-hand side, likely Nils Lundqvist on the right-hand side. So do I think the Rangers need Brendan Smith on that team in case there's an injury? Not really. Robertson under contract. Schneider under contract. Again, only one of Jones or Tarmo will be in the lineup on any given night. Say the Rangers didn't have a veteran defenseman back there. It's not a need for me, but I'm also not going to be the guy that's going to like tell you not to re-sign Brendan Smith for $1 million next year. It feels like good business. It doesn't seem like a bad idea, but I don't, whatever happens to Brendan Smith, I just hope he's happy. He seems like a genuinely nice dude. So I hope he finds peace and eternal NHL altitude.
There you go. I like NHL altitude. Anything else we want to cover before we get to our two interviews? I don't think so.
Oh, just how tired I am.
I'm so sorry, Greg. It's gonna be tough for you,
tough,
buddy.
Man, it is. Listen, if there's anything I know in this world, it is hard being a 32-year-old white male. It is just absolutely impossible.
So tough for you, bud.
Man, life as you know it is super hard. I don't know. It is what it is. Do we have any questions this week?
Not that I have right up at this point in time, but we will be, as we will transition away from The Athletic this week, we will be going to Discord questions and five stars next week. So that'll be it. So let's transition over to our interviews, and then we'll see you at the end of the show. How about that, Greg?
Okay.
What do you want? Am I missing something?
No, you caught me off guard by saying that I have to stay.
Yeah, you do. You do have to stay. Okay. Just 1 second. Right. Here we go. Right. Transition.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hey, we're back with Molly Walker. She's the co-host of Up in the Blue Seats. She's a hockey writer, reporter, everything at the New York Post. Molly, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Are you great because of UMass?
I am on cloud nine, if we're being honest. And I'm so excited. Haven't been able to talk about UMass in a professional setting, but here we are. I'm ready to gush, ready to show my fandom. I don't care. It took me 4 years that I couldn't be a fangirl about it, but I finally can openly root for UMass. And now Zach Jones might be coming to the Rangers.
Might be. We'll talk about that in just a second. So you have been following UMass for a very long time. Obviously, you're doing, you've broken your oath as a reporter and rooting for them. I'm rooting for them outwardly. How dare you? What was it like winning the national championship as a fan? Because I wonder, I'd like to win a championship, and I just want to know what the feeling feels like.
Well, first of all, just the fact that there were so many people on Twitter.com that were congratulating me as if I was on the ice. Like, thank you to all of those people. So kind. I truly did not deserve any bit of congratulations, but I got an abundance of it. But I mean, if anybody listening watched the game, I mean, that was just a 5-0. And coming from someone that was in Buffalo 2 years ago when they lost 3-0 to Minnesota Duluth, and it wasn't even a competition. And from puck drop, I looked at my fellow beat writers and we just shook our heads. We knew that they were going to get pummeled, and they did. It wasn't, they were so outmatched, even with Cale Makar, Mario Ferraro, John Leonard, you know, those big guys that are now all in the NHL. It was just so lopsided, but just even in the semifinal game against Minnesota Duluth, they really held their own. They really powered through it. It was another overtime winner, and then they just demolished St. Cloud in that final game, 5-0.
Hate
I really have
it.
Never seen it.
Hate to see it.
Never. it was what a freaking game, man. They were unstoppable. I mean, top, like, 10 goals I've ever seen in my entire life from Phil Lagunov, the nastiest of dangles I've ever seen in my entire life. So very, very exciting. And of course, Zach Jones was also stellar throughout the whole NCAA tournament. So Rangers fans, get excited.
Yeah, why don't we start with Zach Jones? I'm going to cut off Greg because I'm pretty sure that's where he was going to go. Greg?
Oh, no, it's not even cutting me off. I am such a zombie that at this point you're doing everybody a favor.
Yes, fresh off a flight, I heard. Thank you for joining us.
Molly, it has been a day. I am old as shit, and I just can't do it anymore.
The ripe age is 32.
32. Can't do it.
Stop it. Don't do that to yourself.
All right, so Zach Jones, there was some reports today, some confirmed by you seemingly, that Zach Jones would sign with the New York Rangers at this point in time. Gorton then came out and was like, I cannot comment on that at this time. Very GM-like of him. What do we know so far? What do we know of Zach Jones and his play? Our current coworker and our former coworker tomorrow, Scott Wheeler, talked about how he's just a level below Adam Fox, but on the same level as Nils Lundqvist. There's a lot to go around here. So where do we even start?
Well, it's very interesting. I do want to mention that just a mere 2 months ago when we had him on our podcast, he was very adamant about going back to UMass. He said the words, he did not feel like he was ready. He didn't feel like he was strong enough. He wanted to take the summer to build up his strength, you know, get stronger and work on his game. And he even like made a point to say it could even take another 2 years. You know, he could stay for all 4 years at UMass. And then I guess one of two things had to happen. Winning a national championship changed his mind, or the Rangers came calling and they said, we want you now. So obviously he could have, if he had stayed for all 4 years at UMass, then he would have been a UFA by the time that came around. So obviously the Rangers didn't want that to happen. So that also is kind of a factor that makes me think that there's a possibility the Rangers were like, let's get a deal done now, and that they were okay with burning a year of his contract. And something that I'm starting to see in the NHL and also between the Rangers and Islanders in particular, it's this trend of bringing the prospects over early, even if they're not going to play. Like you saw with the way the Islanders brought Sorokin to the playoff bubble. He didn't play. He wasn't eligible. But they want to integrate these players with the rest of the team, have them get comfortable. So I think that's a little bit of a trend that we're seeing here that could be a possibility with Zach Jones. But yes, they are close in talking with Zach's camp and my sources at the school. They are close. They are currently discussing a deal right now. So whether that comes to fruition, I don't know when it'll be, but they are engaging in conversations, and it does not seem like he will be returning to UMass for next season.
Oh, Molly, a couple of things I saw today during my travels was the Ranger fans that were getting upset that the team was going to sign him and burn the first year of his entry level. From what I've been able to dig up, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, had he not signed this year because of his age, he would have only been able to sign a 2-year entry level deal beginning next year. So either he signs a 3-year deal and burns the first year this year, or he was only getting a 2-year deal had he signed at any point after this season.
Yeah, so honestly, it's the same thing. It really doesn't matter.
Right.
And then the
other part there, and then I'll give you the floor again because
no, you're good.
This is about as many words as I'll be able to get out of my mouth for the entire day. This is the one opportunity the Rangers could be like, listen, we have an open spot on left-hand mm-hmm. side. Lieber Hayek is not a guy that's going to necessarily keep someone else from earning some ice time with the Rangers the rest of this year. So this is the unique situation where the Rangers could be like, you've accomplished everything you've wanted to accomplish in college, and we won't send you to Hartford. So why don't you come on down?
Yeah, it's a total possibility. And in speaking with Zach Jones's camp, they basically said that it's going to be up to David Quinn to make those types of decisions of when he's put in the lineup and whatnot. So that's kind of all the missing information here, is if the Rangers were the ones that came calling, or was it Zach that said now he's ready? I really don't know. There's a lot of question marks there, but the one thing that is definite is they are trying to come to an agreement. And yeah, I really, who knows, maybe they do send him down to Hartford. But like you just said, Libor Hayek is definitely not doing what the Rangers probably want him to do right now. And they are very high on Zach Jones. I know Chris Drury has said to me before, they were elated when he fell to them in the draft, when he was drafted. They wanted him from the start, like he was on their list that they were gunning for. And they love him. So they think very highly of him. And David Quinn was talking about it the other day. that they're high on him, like I said. So I am very curious to see how it goes down and what they do plan on doing with him. But there are a couple question marks. And I personally just want to ask him, you know, what the heck changed from 2 months? Because, guys, he
2 days ago, Molly.
Yeah, I know. He was so adamant about it. He was so, like, and confident in the way that he was saying it. And I know Greg Carvel, and I know that he has been preaching to that UMass squad to look at Cale Makar and look at Mario Ferraro. And Cale Makar was probably ready to go to the NHL after his freshman year, but he stayed for his sophomore year to develop further and to get stronger and to really dominate at the NCAA level, and then went on to the NHL and won the Calder Trophy. And now he's up for a Norris Trophy, you know, like, he did it the right way. So I feel like that entire UMass locker room really hangs on that, on those words, and really resonates with that. So that's why I feel like Zach Jones was so confident in saying that, because he really did believe that it would be in his best interest to stick around for another year. But I mean, a national championship for sure can change that. I remember in talking to Morgan Barron before this past season, when he first signed, he was also saying, you know, Cornell's season got cut short because of the pandemic, and they were kind of in the hunt for going to the Frozen Four. They were really on the cusp there. And he was like, I just really want to win a national championship. You know, that was the only thing that he was, that was pulling him back, basically, you know, that, but once that's accomplished, there's, you know, if you kind of in your mind, you feel like there's nothing left to do, which I don't blame them.
I do think we'll end up seeing both the players you just named on, and at least in one game of the Ranger roster the rest of the season. I do think we'll see Zach Jones. I hope. Of course. And Morgan Barron to me is like a no-brainer. I think he'll be playing up here on the New York Rangers pretty soon. Let's fast forward to the trade deadline, which was happened today, and nothing really happened for the Rangers. Jones was the big story. Are you surprised that it was quiet?
No, not at all. I really, when you look at the Rangers right now, where they're at in the rebuild, and I wrote about this extensively the other day, they're not buyers, they're not sellers. They're kind of in this awkward in-between space right now where they have a cabinet full of young, promising players at all positions that are there to build around, that are there developing in the wings, but they have a few needs and areas and holes where they really can fill, and that's like physicality and, you know, those types of gritty, dirty players, because the Rangers have an abundance of finesse, skill kind top six players that are, they're just coming out of their ears in them. And it's tough to watch almost, because for, especially for David Quinn, and I know the Fire Quinn Brigade, you know, whatnot, but yep. it's a tough decision when you have so many of the same kind of players. Someone's got to play on the fourth line. You know, someone has to be on that. You can't play like six players on the first line, six on the second. Like, it doesn't work that way. There's three spots on each line. But that's also why he's had so many, you know, jumbling up his lines mid-game. And we saw it. He plugged Vitali Kravtsov into every single line at least once throughout the night, which was pretty enjoyable to watch, honestly.
It's incredible. Yeah, he's been moving him up and down the lineup. That's David Quinn, though, the blender. It just happens with him. And if someone like Chris,
oh, I like that.
They call it the blender. You could take it. I don't even want it, but I call it the blender. He does it every single line. He puts the lines right in a blender, and then that's it. Like Kravtsov, people will be really upset. He's on the fourth line, and then all of a sudden, Chris Kreider takes one of the worst penalties I've seen in a long time versus the Islanders.
Oh, God. That was tough.
Yeah, just throwing the puck right over the wall. And Chris had a really rough game. He's been in the invisible mode of is either superhuman or invisible. It's like, you know, that question, like, would you rather have super strength or invisibility? Chris usually has one of those two. and we're in the invisibility part of Chris Kreider currently, but he'll come back to it. But when Chris Kreider struggles, and when Blackwell is not up to his I'm going to score in the first 3 minutes self, you can see Quinn pull Kravtsov up and down the lineup. He played on all four lines for the bingo card versus the Islanders. So it is a great situation for Kravtsov, who seems to be proving himself pretty quickly.
And to Quinn's credit, you know, everybody likes to say he only benches the youngins. He only sits what did he do with Chris Kreider? He put him on the fourth line. Like, Chris Kreider is as the definition of a veteran that you can get, especially with the Rangers. He's been with them his entire career, and he's shown it. He's done it to Buchnevich too, like when he needs to do it. So nobody can sit there and say he only does it to the young players. Like, no, yes, David Quinn has that college mentality. He kind of does that.
There are people screaming right now, Molly. There are people screaming. Wait, hold on. I'm going to give you a chance to respond. There are people screaming at whatever they're listening to this on, their iPhones, their transistor radio, their Raspberry Pis, their microwave, whatever. They're screaming. They're saying, yes, Chris Kreider was put on the fourth line. But then when they went on the power play, he was simply out there on power play one again. You know it was
You're
coming.
Not right. You're not wrong.
They're screaming right now.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. But you have to give credit where it's due. You really do. He does it to everybody in the lineup. He really does. And for someone like Chris Kreider, like, that's a huge ego, you know, slap to the face. That's like, that really, but sometimes you need that, you know, sometimes you need that kind of, yes, like Quinn, you know, has that kind of college attitude. And like I said, he just, you know, that's just how he does things. That's all he knows. So, I mean, but it does work in some sense, but I've said this before, the biggest problem with David Quinn is that, yes, he treats everybody in the lineup the same way, but I feel like he needs to get a better grasp of how he relates to his veteran players. I think that he has it down pat with the young players, that, you know, because those are the types of players he's used to working with, but he needs to get a better hold on how he communicates with the older guys. I feel it just feels a little lopsided to me, you know.
Mm-hmm. Molly, I have two actual hockey questions for you. Whoa. Before I ask the hockey question, Ryan was just listing things. Can someone explain to me why refrigerators connect to Wi-Fi now?
No.
I don't know why Ryan listening to the 17 things he listed that you can get a podcast on.
You can listen to the podcast at the fridge, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think that's the thing.
Why does my fridge need to connect to Wi-Fi? This isn't just hungover Greg asking this question, but hungover Greg is like exacerbated by the fact that it's now all I can think about. I just can't think of anything in this world that needs to connect to Wi-Fi less than a refrigerator. Anyway,
well, in this day and age, I feel like everything needs to connect to Wi-Fi.
Yeah, but it's like, do you only get orange juice if you're on the house Wi-Fi? Like, what? I don't. Anyway, you're neither here nor there. Molly, two hockey related questions.
Yes.
One, was there something you expected the Rangers to do at the trade deadline if they were going to make a trade?
I think that after what happened with Brendan Lemieux, I expected maybe one more move in that similar fashion, just unloading cap space, you know, because that's in reality, like that's what, and to the forward group in particular, or Brendan Smith, you know, one or the other, because they have just so many, like they just have way too many forwards of the same type of caliber. And they're obviously, everybody's under a financial cap strain this year. So I did, after what happened with Lemieux, I was a little bit taken aback because they unloaded one of their most physical players and someone that did bring that grit and snarl to the lineup that they really, you can count on one hand how many players play like that. And one of them is Ryan Lindgren and Brendan Lemieux and maybe Brendan Smith on occasion and sometimes Chris Kreider. But that's here, neither here nor there, like you said. But I did think that maybe after seeing that they were going that route, that they were going to do maybe one more kind of move like that. But otherwise, I expected it to either be that or nothing at all, like we've seen.
Second question for me. Now that we had pitched this story a couple times to The Athletic, and since they didn't bite on it, you are an established NHL reporter. How come you aren't writing constantly about the Tampa Bay Lightning cheating? Constantly cheating.
Well, I mean, I can barely get the New York Post to let me write about the New York Islanders. They are a New York team.
First place.
So, unfortunately, I can't write about any other team except for the Rangers.
Good answer. Smart answer, too. We just had to bring it up once a podcast. It's really important. You should read about it. It's actually pretty crazy.
You should just sell that pitch. Like, you should just go around to outlets and say, like, give us credit at the bottom at the very least, and maybe someone will buy it
off
you.
It's just really,
it's getting, patron account. It's getting to a point now where Friege sent out the tweet about, who was it even, the Savard that went to Tampa Bay? And half of his responses were people tagging Ryan and I being like, you're going to let them get away with this? And I don't know what people – we're trying. We're absolutely trying. It makes no sense whatsoever that they're allowed to add salary, and yet here we are.
Here we are. A minus $9 million cap hit is where they sit currently. Yeah. Not really sure
it
how that works.
It doesn't make any
pretty
sense.
I'm not a math guy. But,
honestly, all of the numbers – me neither. Trust me, all the math stuff. Like, I can't even tell you how many times I text my colleague Larry Brooks a day asking him to clarify things for me about the cap situation and the years, the eligibility. ability of all that stuff. It's so confusing.
Does anyone else call Larry the Click King? It's just us.
No, it's just you guys. But honestly, it is so fitting. I mean, everybody has their opinion on Larry, but the one thing is for sure, you want to hear what he has to say.
We do it.
And no matter what, that's always going to keep him where he is, but is one of the best of in the industry.
Larry, the final key to our beat writer power gauntlet. We will someday get him on this show. I know we kind of talked about Brandon Smith, but have you gotten any feedback from what the Rangers think about him around the locker room? He does seem sort of like an extra coach, despite actually playing maybe some of his best hockey in the last 4 years, these past couple games.
Yeah, you know, I asked David Quinn about that the other night after the Islander game, after Brendan Smith declared that he wants to be a Ranger, you know, his whole situation, he's about to be a UFA, but he wants to be here. And he very adamantly expressed that. So I wanted to, you know, get another quote for my piece on that. And I asked Quinn about him. And Quinn said he just has a model work ethic, and that above all else, he is just a great example to the young kids in the locker room. And I feel like he probably doesn't get as much notoriety about the leadership that he brings, because, I mean, whenever we speak to him, he is so, he just gets it. You know, he just gets what the whole media thing is, and knows how to elaborate and how to really go in depth. And it makes all of our lives so much easier. But he's so well spoken and just articulates his thoughts and feelings and analyzes the team so well for us. And I feel like that translates over into the locker room and translates over into his relationships with the young players. And that's, you know, that's something you can't buy. You know, that's really something that is so, you're just so fortunate to have as like a bonus in a player. It's not something that people usually value as much. Although this particular deadline has seen, with, you know, Nick Foligno going around, and it really has been a big point of emphasis for this trade deadline is leadership. But I just feel like Brendan Smith definitely doesn't get acknowledged as much as he should for the type of leadership that he brings in the locker room. And he's just definitely a good guy to have around. And I also think it's very impressive that he can really be plugged anywhere. You know, he can play, forward.
Goalie.
Honestly, strap the pads onto him, see what he can do, because honestly, this guy can play everywhere.
Yep.
Molly, with the abundance of children on defense, and we talked about Zach Jones, Nils Lundqvist on the horizon, the Tarmo Runanens, the Matt Robertsons, the amount of young defensemen the New York Rangers currently employ, can you see any scenario in which Brendan Smith comes back on a one-year deal as like the seventh defenseman for the Rangers next year?
See, I think that it'll come down to price, and it'll come down to if he's willing to take a pay cut. But like you just mentioned, I feel like they really are. They're stacked on the defensive end of things, and they really have a lot of players that they're looking forward to, especially in Jones and Nils Lundqvist. Like you said, I think those two are going to round out the bottom six very shortly here. And as much as I would like it, especially for Brendan Smith, who very clearly said he wants to stay with the Rangers, I definitely think it'll be a really tough situation for Jeff Gordon to be in, because they do need to start giving these players a look. And I feel like that's been a theme for this entire season, and it probably will stay next season, is when do you let the children take over? You know, when do you really just start riding the young ones? Which, against the Islanders, David Quinn was riding that kid line left
constantly.
Here.
It was the best.
It was so fun. But honestly, why wouldn't he? Because that was the only line that was really going. So
that was it.
But exactly. So
that line and Krastov. That's it.
Yeah. And that doesn't happen every night. But when it does, David Quinn at least was able to recognize that and really rode them for as long as he possibly could. But I think that's definitely a hard decision that David Quinn and the rest of the organization have to make, is when do you really switch over to the lines?
We have another caller in coming in real quick. 1 second. Thanks, Jeff. Molly, I can't thank you enough for joining us today.
No problem. I was like scared. I was like, is this like a hack caller?
No.
I wasn't sure what it was.
Well, why don't you go ahead and plug your place at the New York Post and everything else you do?
Oh, sure. Yes, you can read my stories at the New York Post in the paper, physical paper.
Wow.
If you still like that kind of thing. And at nypost.com. Follow me on Twitter, Molly Walker, 2 E's, 2 R's. And yeah, this has been fun, as always.
Pleasure as always, Molly. Talk soon.
All right, thanks.
Hey, we're back with our big guest of the day. We have Jeff Bookaboom. You might have heard of him. He is a Stanley Cup champion with the New York Rangers and also the Oilers. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem, guys. I'm glad to be here.
Me too. let's start this off with a nice, easy question. What's the most surprising thing you've drank from a Stanley Cup?
I drank from the Stanley Cup? I think it was just pretty regular booze, if I remember correctly. I don't think it was anything crazy or anything, but I think it's just regular beer, champagne. That's about it. I don't recall anything. It's been such a long time, so I don't recall anything that's crazy.
You know, a lot of people have like those. I know Phil Kessel had hot dogs. A lot of people do some cereal. That's why I wanted to ask if there was anything crazy we didn't know.
Right? Yeah, no. No, there's nothing like that. Nothing that I can remember. Like I said, I think it was just the regular beers and champagne, maybe something other, but that's about it.
Wonderful. Let's get right into it. There is a player on the New York Rangers called Adam Fox. Maybe you've heard of him. He is having Norris contention this year, having a little bit of a season for himself. You played with a player named Brian Leetch. Can you tell me any of the similarities mm-hmm. between the two or what you're seeing right now?
Well, it's an interesting comparison because you've seen the numbers he's putting up. I like the fact that he's wearing my number. But, you know, there's some similarities. I think Brian was a better skater, maybe.
Yep.
I think Fox is a smooth skater, but Brian was more like a pull-away guy who would cut once and be gone. Especially with the puck, he could beat you on the rush with the puck pretty easily. Fox is, I think he's more a real cerebral player, obviously. And, you know, he's thinking a step or two ahead of everyone. He's got that gift. There's not too many people that have that gift, and he has, and he can outweigh you. He reminds me, his mind reminds me of Zubov more than Brian, actually. I mean, Zubov was such a great passer, and he had ice in his veins. He just waited the last minute until something opened up, and then he could hit you. So I think there's a lot of the two of them in there, and, you know, that's great comparison, two Hall of Famers that I was able to play with.
Jeff, last year during the pandemic when absolutely nothing was going on, Ryan and I both did deep dives on the 94 Cup run. And while a big takeaway from that entire run is just the incredible play of Brian Leetch, it also can't be understated mm-hmm. how important your role was playing alongside Leetch, how you allowed him to do a lot of what he does well. What was it like from your perspective? What did you bring to that pairing that the casual fan may not have been able to identify?
Well, I think we were able to read off each other fairly well. I was not counted on offensively, and I wasn't an offensive player as a pro. As a junior, I put up some numbers, but, you know, it's a different game, obviously, once you get to that level. And, you know, Brian and I meshed together well. We were able to communicate well on the ice. We were able to take advantage of what either one of us did for the team and for each other. I think we read, you know, we were just in sync from day one. And Brian was such a easy guy to play with also because he was, you know, I always say he's probably one of the more underrated players I've ever played with. People don't realize how hard he played, how hard he was on himself, how, you know, he'd go block shots, he'd go in the corner with guys bigger than him all the time and usually come out with a puck. And he didn't try. He wasn't just an offensive player that was a finesse player. He played hard. So, you know, that's the way I remember things. And I think, you know, we talked about every time we see each other, it seems like it always comes up. And it's great to have an opportunity to have a partner like Brian because of his ability. And not only that, he was just a class person, good teammate also at the same time.
One of the other big takeaways we had from doing the deep dive, what was it like playing for Keenan back then? I know he's like a different era of a coach, and it seems sometimes that you guys won in spite of him rather than because of him.
For me, it was easy. You know, I was his style of player. He didn't really. There's an incident in training camp where he comes down the bench and needs me in the back and says, "I hear you're tough." So I go out there. I jump over the boards next shift. I run Nick Bacola from the Islanders and then drop the gloves and punch, beat him in a fight. And he didn't really talk to me this year. So it was pretty good that way. But there's great stories. I remember Eddie Olchuk. We almost got in a fight in practice because, he was always in the lineup and he was always working his butt off to get in the lineup. He was such a great teammate for us that he, he got his way to work extra hard in practice and, he hit me and it was a little dirt. Or I thought it was a little dirty. He didn't, but, and then we got into it a little bit. So a month goes by and he used to call me Farmer because I grew up on a dairy farm and he goes, "Farmer, remember, a month ago when we almost got in a fight in practice?" I said, Oh yeah, I remember that. And he goes, "Yeah, I haven't been out of the lineup since." So it was pretty funny because Keenan loved that, right? He wanted a guy like Eddie, who was more of a finesse player, to play hard and be confrontational. And it started in practice one day. So, everyone has their own stories. Everyone has, and some guys are good, some are bad, and some guys are in between. So they're great stories. They're great memories, obviously, that ended in very successfully.
Jeff, I'm always curious. We all know you got into coaching after your career. You're still connected to the game, doing some scouting. Was there a defining moment during your playing career where you thought to yourself, the obvious next progression for me is going to be behind the bench? Did you ever, was there a moment in your career that snapped into place for you?
No, I think it was just the passion for the game and you tried to give back on a consistent basis and you thought you could always pass a long knowledge. You could show other players how to be professional, how to improve their game, how to, be successful, especially the younger players. I started with coaching my kids and then moving up junior and then American League and NHL. So, it's just, you always want to give back and you always want these players to succeed. And especially, when you, your organizations that you grew up with in, starting with Edmonton and all the way to the Rangers. So, my job still, my passion now is still hockey because, I'm going to see the Rangers get back to that and hold that cup up. And, I don't want, I want another couple or three in my lifetime. And, I think if you look at the team, there's some real positives. I think the young guys are really playing well, especially of late. Oh, yeah. The reason why they're coming together and, like a guy like Hedo missed some time and you see his progression. And, Cockle, I think it's been very good lately. Same with Lafreniere, and they're on a line together. And then obviously the rest of the team in general, Miller on the point, obviously Fox's second year and Lindgren second year. These guys are just coming into their prime. Some of them are just getting into figuring things out. You look at, I had a few people ask me about Lafreniere, because I was scouting some American League games here in Ontario because no one can from outside Ontario can go watch them. And a couple of scouts asked me, but what's going on with Lafreniere and Cockle? And says, "Oh, don't worry, they'll be fine," because I watch a lot more of the Ranger games than I ever had in the past. And you can see them, you can see the ability. You can see it's just going to take some time because these guys have been off of hockey for a long time for anyone, let alone a young guy. And then, no training camps, just, practicing against themselves. So, timeline's a little bit different for these guys. And you've seen with other rookies that come in, Heidi Tauge.
Have you been surprised at all by Kako's ability to sort of be a defensive forward before his offensive game is really developed? Obviously, when we scouted, or when anybody scouted Kaapo Kakko, the offensive ability was all there. He had all those tools in his possession. But the defensive game was never part of this projection for him, and yet he's become this sort of two-way forward over the last 2 months.
Well, you know, there's I didn't watch a lot of him in his draft year, obviously, because he's from Finland. You know, I was scouting for the team at the time, so you see videos of that. But in a lot of those players in the European League, when they're playing against men, they learn the away from the puck and how to play away from the puck very well. You know, because he wasn't playing against his own age group, he was playing against men. And they don't get on the ice if they're going to be a liability. It's as good offensively as some of these young guys are, they're usually on this, they're not usually the top players on these men's teams. So they have to learn how to play the away from the puck and without the puck. And that's why usually, you know, they're usually a step ahead of the junior players that are coming out at 20 when they're like, or it's around the same age because they're playing with men, and whereas the junior players are still playing against their age group.
Jeff, it feels like this was more than 4 years ago, but it was only 4 years ago when you were on the bench with Vigneault and his staff. Is it jarring for you to see that there are only three players left from that Ottawa playoff series? Smith, Zibanejad, and Kreider?
Not really. I think you look at the mission statement, the route the team was going to take, and you see it with other teams too. Like, you know, I'm in Ontario here, and Toronto did the same thing about 6-8 years ago. And, you know, they said, look, we're going to tear this down and start over. And now they're, you know, they believe that they're going to take a run for the cup. So you look at how these young guys come in the league, and, you know, especially guys that you're counting on being frontline top six players, top four defensemen on a lot of these teams. And you get a high pick and they start to develop, and then you fill in underneath, and it doesn't take long. And you can see, you know, how competitive we are right now and how close we are to making the playoffs last year than last year, and same with this year. So we're right there, and you see the guys are drafted, like the goalies have always had a tough time.
Just Durkin.
His name's Just Durkin, yeah. You know, he was drafted 7 years ago, I think it was.
Long time.
He's not 20. He's not 20 or 21. He's 24, 25. So, you know, but all those draft picks are starting to mature and come to light. And as a result, the team can take that next step. And, you know, instead of paying high price for free agents, you're developing your own and you fill in with some free agents. You know, obviously, you look at Panarin, that's a hell of a free agent signing. He helps everyone. He helps everyone on the ice, and he helps these young guys too when they play with him. So, it's the nature of the game. You know, it's a young man's game. You look at when I was playing, and you know, there's a lot of 30-year-old players in the game. Now there's not too many unless you're a star or an exceptional role player. So it's a young man game, and you know, you look at guys. I know my son was drafted in the NHL, and I'm looking at guys he played junior with, and they're 29 now, and you're going, they're close to the end of their career, and that's hard to believe.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, when I was playing, it seemed like you're just getting your prime or in your mid late 20s, and you're, but you know, the economics has changed, the game's changed, and as a result, it's younger man's game.
Has there been a certain New York Ranger prospect you've scouted that you really thought to yourself, wow, this guy is special? Either that player's on the team now or is looming to make the team in the next few years?
Well, it's not always like that because the guys you really, you know, like the first draft, I think, is the kid from Carolina, the second pick overall, was playing in Barry. And the Russian, what's his name, Shenshnikov. And, you know, you knew you didn't have a shot at him. So, you know, it's more, you know, what makes your draft and makes your team very competitive and makes it, you know, you have to fill in with the later picks. And there's last year we traded one of those picks that I was really high on was Joey Keane. he already went through the draft, and he was playing in Barry Wishnesnikov. So I really liked him, and our head scout came in and really liked him also. And, you know, he was there for in the third round, and, you know, he's not in the organization anymore, but we traded for a player we thought was going to be a real good player in number 12 there.
Gauthier.
Yep. Yeah, so, you know, sometimes those players that you really like and you think you're going to might make your team, might not, they turn into other assets. So, you know, Gauthier is still young and he's got an upside, he's a big player. And Joakim might still play and still be a good NHL player. We really don't know, but you make these decisions and because there's only so many first round picks, and every year it's a little bit different. You go through the drafts the last 4 years, and there's success, there's failures, there's everything in between. And, you know, the draft this year, I didn't see him a lot, but I really liked Snyder. And a lot of people in our, a lot of people in our organization really like him. Like we traded up to get him. Yep. In the first rounds, and same with our second pick. So some of those guys are, you know, as a scout, you try not to fall in love with them because it's hard because you see them a lot. Some of them you see a lot, some of them you don't. But you want to make sure that you got your rating and what you see in them is accurate. And because not everyone's going to be a Fox or a Leach or, you know, Zinovlad, Panarin, whatever, you know, you need those guys on the third line. You need those guys, you need the whole team to win. And sometimes that team's going to look a little bit different in the regular season as opposed to the playoffs too.
You mentioned it being a young man's game. And I wanted to circle back to that because we look at this Ranger team and how it seems like they don't have a defenseman that can legally drive in some states. But when you were behind the bench, hard to think of a team that had just a more diverse group of defensemen than with you. You had both Girardi and Staal, who were on the other side of 30. Brady Shea was a rookie. Ryan McDonough in the prime of his career. And then, of course, the role players like the Holdens, the Brendan Smiths, who was acquired at the deadline, Kevin Klein. How was it for you to manage a guy like Shea, literally making his breakthrough in the NHL, also while managing McDonough, who's in the prime of his career, while also trying to get some second legs out of Staal and Girardi when they've already been through the ringer, they've played more games than anyone that can count, they're a little banged up. How is it managing all these different personalities all at once?
Well, the personalities were great. They're professionals, and they showed up to play hard regardless. That was an issue. It was trying to get Brady Shea the proper amount of ice time and make sure he earned it at the same time, which he did, and he just kept playing more and more as the season went on. Because of his youth and his skating ability, we needed him to improve, and he did. And then, you know, Ryan McDonough, he tried not to overplay him, you know, because he's one of those players, he'd be first guy out there in a power play, first guy out there in penalty kill, and then 5-on-5. So it was managing nice time. The players and the personalities were easy. It was just trying to slot them in and fit them in a situation where they could succeed and we could also at the same time. So it's always about managing, you know, with Ryan, and, you know, and good for him, he gets to stand a cup in Tampa, unfortunately not in New York, but you know, he was a horse, but at the same time he was playing upwards in the mid 20 minute range, so he tried to make sure that he didn't burn him out and he was ready for playoffs. So it was easy, you know, at the same time, like you say, most of the guys were older and they were coming in. We were trying to make still take a run at it for the year after that also, for that matter. And like I said, it wasn't tough because they're professionals. They're good people and they made things easier.
Did you always get the vibe from Dan Girardi that he was going to have a future coaching when he was with the Rangers?
I never really thought much about it, quite honestly. I thought you're in the moment. You don't think past it. There's certain guys you come across every once in a while, you can see it. It jumps out at you. So this guy's very, intellectual. He's asking a lot of questions. He's wondering about this, that, and everything. And, maybe asking about drills and practice, stuff like that. So everyone's a little bit different. And some of those guys jump off the page at you. But Dan, like I said, he just went out there and played hard and blocked shots and did what he had to do for the team and carved out a nice niche for himself in the league, obviously, and he's an important part of the Rangers. And now you can see that, he's pressing the coaching and you see what that leads to.
You've obviously been following the team this year. I think we're at the beginning of the window opening. We've been all tugging as fans on the windows, trying to get it open, suffocating in the room the past couple of years, in what is maybe the fastest rebuild of all time in hockey. So all credit to the New York Rangers in that way. Do you feel like the New York Rangers' window for contention is sort of opening next year, with these last 2 years sort of being mini successes? And if the Rangers played in any other division, they would likely make the playoffs this year?
Well, yeah, there's still a crop of young guys coming forward. You look at just on defense with Lundqvist, and he was in Sweden, and then Snyder's next. You got some good young players still coming along, but at the same time, and that's a management decision. Is okay, when's the rebuild at the point where you say, okay, we did enough here, we need to take that next step, and it with the guys, with a guy like DeAndre coming in, Miller and coming in and earning a spot probably a year ahead of time, it makes that takes a step forward for us. And like I said, the next wave this wave's got their foot in the door, and they're probably some guys are going to take big leaps next year, you would think. It doesn't always happen that way, but you would think so. You see, like, Heedle, he's in third year, I think, and now he's taking that next leap. You can envision Kako taking that next leap. He's already doing it, in my estimation, yep, this year, right now. And then next year, you would think it's going to be a big jump for him, and same with Lafreniere. So, there's some lot of voices. And there's good management there. So I think we're heading in the right direction. The players will determine when that rebuild is and when that, maybe you start trading prospects for seasoned players or not. So the players always determine what happens, not the management, because, if you're playing great, they're probably not going to trade you. They're probably going to build around you. So, and some guys fall off and some guys step up. So it's a combination of things. And like I said, we're lucky to have the management in place that's doing a hell of a job.
Jeff, one of the things we get asked probably most often by fans who listen to the show is whether we think this season is a success or failure, depending on whether the Rangers make the playoffs or not. Ryan and I tend to believe that no matter what happens, playoffs or not, this has been a very important growth season for the Rangers. I'm curious. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if you think this season, the only way it could be considered successful is if the Rangers punch a ticket to the playoffs.
I think it's not so much the playoffs as much as how we finish. You can see the last two games, for example, I thought were very encouraging. Going into the Islanders, they've lost once at home in regulation before we beat them, and then we get 3 out of 4 points. But that's really encouraging. And not only that, is young guys were leading the way, I think, for the most part.
Yep.
So that's, that's how you got to look at it. I think if we, at the end of the day, if we make the playoffs, that's huge. But if we make the playoffs and the young guys aren't part of the, pushing that bus, that'll be a bit of an issue. If we count on the older guys to lead the way, and young guys don't get better and don't improve and don't push the bus like the guys that are up front leading it, then it'll be a concern. But I don't see that happening. Like I said, I think it's really encouraging to see these young guys doing what they're doing. And not only that, I think you look at top to bottom, they're all playing very well. And just even the guys that maybe aren't as young, like Kevin Rooney's been really impressive for me, I think, in his role and what he does, and he's, you know, third, fourth line player. But, you know, the encouraging part of the team is now we've got everyone healthy. You got Panarin back from what happened there. And it's for, you know, since we've been healthy, you look at our record, it's pretty good. And you can see how it's encouraging. Because, you know, if we were 100% the whole time and we went through some of those stretches where it wasn't as encouraging, then there'd be some concerns possibly. But like I said, I think it's very encouraging to see what some of these guys are doing on a consistent basis and how the team is really, it's getting deeper by the game, it seems. And these young guys are pulling their weight. That's exciting.
Jeff, I can't thank you enough for your time tonight. It really means the world to us. Greg, do you have any final questions for our dear friend Jeff Bookaboom?
Just one more for me, Jeff. So the NHL didn't start keeping average time on ice totals until your final season with the Rangers. Would Ranger fans have been as crazy about Ranger defensemen time on ice and forward time on ice totals during the 93-94 season as they are this year?
Well, I think it would have been interesting, because it seemed like every shift or Zuboff release was out there.
Yeah, it's 40 minutes. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, so I think it would have – the statistics part of things would have been interesting, that's for sure, because it was funny, we're going through some exercises from a scouting perspective, and the one scout says, I watched, and before there was hockey in Canada, there's a lot of old hockey, like when I played for the Edmonton, playing Calgary and playoff series like that. And even with the Rangers, you know, you get all these so-called games of note from the 90s and 80s and, you know, Gretzky scoring all the, you know, those important milestone goal points that he had or goals. And my one guy says, yeah, you know, I did some tracking, and said, in the one game, and, you know, he used analytics, and he goes, the one game, he says, you stopped it. Sixteen rushes in a row before the blue line and didn't let him get entry or something like that. So, I don't know. But, you know, it's funny how the game's changed and how it's evolved with these all these different data that it's available to everyone now. And it's amazing how if you went back to the data for guys, you know, the Hall of Fame guys like Ness, and, you know, you go down the list on that team especially, how it would apply, because I think it gets I think the new age fan are right into it, the older people probably not so much, but now it, you know, you, when you get Steve Alquette on there talking about the goals and the how when you pass across the midline now the chances go up and stuff, people are more educated than they ever have, and the fans especially. And I think it would have been really interesting to look back at that team and see where all the statistics fell with some of these great players.
Also, I'm just saying, Leach gets all the credit in the world for being a great offensive defenseman. A career high 8 goals for Jeff Bookaboom during the 93-94 season. it doesn't get the love it deserves.
Well, let's be honest with ourselves. You know, I'll take some credit. Don't get me wrong, but if we don't have Brian Leach on that team, we don't win the cup.
Oh, Jeff, Brian Leach has played like 45 minutes those games, man. He's crazy.
Well, it seemed like he never came off ice. And that's the one thing about Brian also. you know, he couldn't get him tired, it seems. You know, he was such a great player, and he was built to play the game the way he did. So it was exciting to be part of that team, that organization. It's still exciting in a different way, and honored to be part of things. But, you know, it's great to see the team doing as well as it's doing. And, to be a Ranger fan right now and go through what this team's gone through in the last 3 years, it's exciting to see the benefits from all that.
It's going to be no better time than the next decade to be a Ranger fan, I'll tell you that. It's going to be a real fun ride. Jeff, cannot thank you enough. Keep doing what you're doing, and we appreciate your time today.
Okay, thanks, guys. Have a great time, and thanks for having me on.
Pleasure. Thank you so much. All right, those were great interviews, Greg. Had a great time.
You did good. I perked up. I perked up for Booch.
Really proud, Booch. Yep.
Well, except it was Boop.
Yeah, our good friend Boop, who we did state. Good job. I want to thank everybody for listening, and especially our Patreon supporters. And I'm going to butcher some names here, so please correct me and DM me on Discord where we have our Patreon if I got these wrong. Amber Cohensberger. Brent, Ben Waters, Billy Huff, Brian Doyle, Broadway Blue Bleeder, Chris, just Chris, Dennis Dietz, Eric Stagg, George Obritsky, Jimmy Mack, JTC, 13, Kyle Franklin, Mike Smith, Samo, Sean Taggart, Stefan Lohmeyer, Swingart, Thomas O'Neill, Tori from Manhattan, Vinny Hay, and Will Spector. There we go. We are back. Thank you for
listening. I would say maybe 30% of those names you actually got.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Well, I'm gonna try to come up with some fun stuff for these names at the end of shows. So stay tuned, everybody.
What, you're just gonna like rename them?
No, I'm gonna like music and like Hall of Fame induction and stuff like that.
You know? Oh my.
Yeah, I have some stuff planned, but it's okay. All right, let's end the show. Thanks for following, of course. Thanks for the feedback. Thanks for supporting us on Patreon. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at Orion Media. You can follow Greg at Blue Shirts Break. We'll be back later this week for BSBOT. Signing off from The Athletic for the last time. Goodbye. We are
goodbye
now.
Goodbye forever.
On Athletic, yeah. Boys. Bye-bye.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.